Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome into the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK, and Sean Carey. Steve on his way in to the Sunbury Motors Studios. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
If you ever want to know, I don't think any fan of this show should ever make an observation or ask again, with a minute to go, why didn't they just take the starters out? Because you got the game in hand. Ten points down with 58 seconds to go.
Quite the scene in Soika last night, and while I was watching it, yes, I saw people walking out.
Well, no, I don't mean walking out. No, okay, look, I don't mean walking out. That's what I'm talking about. You want to know why coaches are really hesitant to pull their people, okay? Northern Iowa, Texas A&M. Reggie Miller against the Knicks. If you're ever wondering why coaches are like, come on, why don't you put the other guys in? Because that's what can happen. We can laugh about it because it's Bucknell. And they won. Now, I know we have the play-by-play call of the day, which we'll play it again, but you got to play Doug's call at the end, because I've already heard it.
Unfortunately, I'm not able to do it at this point. I'm having a major computer issue.
Well, guess who's supposed to straighten that out?
Well, it could be a little more complex than that, so I may
Well, just hit it on the side.
I used to do that to my old Magnavox television when I was in junior high, when I wanted to play the video games on the TV, and that did eliminate the snow on the old 26-inch screen.
Yeah, well, Doug was great. I mean, he was it was pretty emotional, I thought, at the end.
It was terrific.
And you listen to the play. I mean, it's really outstanding the way he calls the play. Like, you know, he gives you the time. He tells you what the deal is, what's going on. All right?
I think I have a way to network this in here. Let me try
then,
something.
Then when the shot was made, he went insane. So, yeah. I thought we had a digital guy that was really, like, that's what he does.
Yeah.
Where is he?
Here we go. This should work.
Okay.
Back up top to Brown. Over to Moore. Deep left corner. Here's a three by McKenzie. And he scores! And the Bison win! 64! McKenzie! You, sir, are my hero!
What a great play. And all five touched the pumpkin in that 10-second stretch at the end of the game, just going around the horn.
Mm-hmm.
amazing.
What a terrific call. Court storm, kids decked out in orange, place going crazy.
Yeah. There you go.
And you expect a good team to do that and finish.
Well, they did. They did. A great...
But at one time, though, they were 1 of 14 from 3.
Whew. Uh-huh. Yeah, but how often have you heard me say these words? The numbers are the numbers. Right? Which means eventually you do either come down to, or not always, but you usually get back to, or you move up to, actually who you are. If you're a 38, 39% three-point shooting team, normally you're going to end up in that neighborhood at some point. I don't know, what they end up with last night? You said they were 1 of 14? What was the final number on that? The numbers are usually the numbers. See, that's what's interesting here about Thursday night. What's interesting about Thursday night here is that Ohio State is the conference leader, and they are justifiably the conference leader. They took out Michigan State at home, and they went to Purdue and won. They should be the conference leader. They have earned it. Yet, Ohio State can play really well, and Penn State can play really well. And to me, in 10 games, if they both play really well, Ohio State might win 5, and Penn State might win 5.
Bucknell last night, three-pointers, finished 6 of 24.
So yep. They were 5 of their last 10 to get back to 25%.
Yep. Field goal percentage at 40%.
Yeah. So, but they hit 5 of their last 10. The numbers of the numbers, my man. Never forget that. Yeah, so big win for them last night. Nathan. If I sat back in his office, that's where you go, oh, man. We got through that one. Oh, my goodness.
He had the same stoic face for a good... Well, every time they showed close-ups of him last night on CBS Sports Network, this just isn't our night at the office.
Yeah, but this, you know, remember, now this is after the Lehigh thing. And Lehigh thing, I thought they played no better than okay in that game. They never got control of anything in that game, and they lost. Remember, they had not played since Lehigh, right?
Correct. 1 week off.
Yeah. And... I'll make this statement about Purdue, and if you wish to apply it to Bucknell, you can. All right? Okay. When I watched Purdue play 2 to 3 weeks ago, they looked untouchable. Good inside-out game, playing well defensively, older team. You can tell they talk. And I'm talking on the floor that they talk. The really good teams, the older teams, they have the ability to talk to one another. They get into transition. You know, you'll find out with, like, you watch Kentucky play Texas A&M the other night, for example. And Texas A&M just absolutely destroyed Kentucky in transition. Why? Because with younger players, there's too much of a tendency in transition where they sit back and, like, they end up attaching themselves to, quote, their guy. And then the play's over in transition, they'll look at each other, well, I had my guy. Well, guess what? In transition, you're not necessarily supposed to have your guy. It's because everybody's running back. You're supposed to pick up a guy, and if you communicate as to who you have, then your ability to stop the player, make it more difficult, becomes exponentially easier. Right? Young players don't usually talk. Young players, well, I have my guy. Well, great. Well, your guy's not the guy that scored. That guy scored. Maybe if you'd gone over there, you would have made the play. All right? And Purdue is that kind of experienced team. But Purdue has also peaked maybe a bit too soon. And they've got two players in particular who are really good players, Dakota Mathias and Vincent Edwards. Everybody hits a little slump every once in a while. But those two have slumped a bit in the last couple of weeks. Doesn't mean they can't get it back this week and then hit the accelerator and go again. but it's hard to maintain that high level all the time. Suddenly St. John's beats Duke, beats Villanova, and beats Marquette in a row. Huh? What? So Bucknell has played really well this year. They're also going to be the team that everybody tries to get. Look, they're going to get everybody's best shot, which means you've got to be on every game. And let's be honest about it. Zach Thomas is as fine an inside-out player as there is in the league. Nana Fallon is as fine an inside player who's really expanded his game over time. No question about it. And then you've got Stephen Brown. A lot of teams would like to have a point guard as experienced as Stephen Brown. Right, there's no getting around it. And so they've got the foundation there, and that experience gets them through games like last night. All right, Mike DeCourcy's on the show later. We got Doug Birdsong on today, right? Doug's at 3:35, right?
Yeah, we're going to have him on for about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Mike will be on at 4:35 today. Come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Welcome back. Great to have you with us on the show today. Well, I'll tell you, the improbable ones are amazing when they happen. And for Bucknell, last night at home, that's about as improbable as it gets. It's a lot like that game a couple of years ago between Northern Iowa and Texas A&M when Northern Iowa came back and won, almost in the same way. It's a lot like that Knicks-Pacers game in the playoffs 20-something years ago, where Reggie Miller went crazy in the waning seconds. But to do that, to be what, I want to say what, they were down 10 with 58 seconds to go, does that sound right?
I'd heard it was 10 with a minute 32 to go, but you could be right there. It was around a minute 30, 32.
I mean, I could be right about a lot of things. I know I've been right about the suit the whole time. So, despite what some members of the audience may think. Name one thing that factually I have not been correct about the suit. I mean, you know, where have I been incorrect factually? You can't name one, can you?
No, nothing is popping into the cranium here on the fly.
That's exactly right. But there they are. They're down, and, oh, you're up big. Put the reserves in. This is why every coach fears it. Every coach fears how it happens. Imagine how Colgate feels. They go through 38, 39 minutes of the game. They're like, all right, look what the heck we've done. Oh, and they get on the bus, and they still lost. Wow.
Yeah, within the last minute or so of the game, the flagrant one that put Nana Fallon on the line. He was able to get one or two, but then getting the ball back.
Yeah, but you got the ball.
That was huge.
Yeah, that's the big part, is getting the ball back. You have to have the ability to call that thing. I mean, because I will tell you in no uncertain terms that at Michigan State, Nick Ward, remember when that foul was called?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That should have been a two, and he should have been gone. But that's not how they chose to call it in that setting. Yeah, and we'll leave it at that. That's not how they chose to call it in that setting. Because normally when you deliberately throw an elbow to somebody's head. So. Hey, by the way, you're not going to know this name, but Wayne Fuller, who was a radio and newspaper person in Batavia. Now, Batavia, of course, is in the New York Penn League. This guy covered Batavia everything for decades, especially the Muck Dogs. So there would be a lot of people, for example, let's take Ryan Howard, for example. Ryan Howard would have gone through Batavia when they were a Phillies affiliate. In fact, the Phillies affiliate was in Batavia for many years. A lot of those guys on that team would have known Wayne Fuller. And the championship team would have known him. As good a guy, as nice a guy, and as much of an institution in that town, not through his own ego, just through his own hard work and effort, passed away. Really was sad to hear that, because he was just a great guy. So, hey, don't like when we lose the good ones out there. Don't like when that happens. This would not be a name that anybody in our audience would know. It'd just be somebody that I know, but I had great respect for, and just wonderful guy. A lot going on, obviously, with Thon this weekend. 700 dancers, 6 student athletes will be involved, including Charlie Schumann from the football team, who will be doing it for the second straight year. Megan Schaefer from soccer will be involved. The student athletes will be Delaney Higgins from field hockey, Connor Raymond from men's golf, Batavia, from Canandaigua, New York. Megan Schaefer, Charlie Schumann, and Serafina Valenti from women's soccer. Also, Nick Scott will dance as an independent. So Nick Scott from football is going to dance as an independent, not associated with Saab. And if you know Nick Scott, you know that, A, he'll make it all the way through, and he will be passionate about it. Nick Scott is... What you always like about Nick Scott, Nick Scott brings passion to everything he does. Football program's hosting approximately 20 Thon families at the Lash Building. It's part of the Thon Explorers program. That will be on Saturday. Student-athlete hour is a Thon favorite. Pep rally. 18 teams will be dancing in the pep rally from Penn State this year. Now, if you're asking why not all 31, remember, some of them are competing and many are on the road. I mean, so that's what they've got going on. So Charlie Schumann, Nick Scott. I already interviewed Charlie and Megan about being in it. Doug Birdsong, next half hour on Bucknell.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hey, by the way, I hope a lot of women do, and not only that, but men listen to that segment tomorrow that Mark's going to have on women and heart attacks. Because the signs of a woman having a heart attack sometimes can be dramatically different than the signs of a man having a heart attack. And so women need to understand those signs, and also men around them need to recognize potential signs as well. So I hope you have a good long listen to that on Mark's show coming up tomorrow. I think it's a very important show that he's doing on that tomorrow, because it's not, you know, the signs of the heart attack in a woman are not quite the same as they are in a guy. And so because of that, I hope both men and women listen to it so they know how to read the signs that will save lives. That's a great show that Mark's having tomorrow. I appreciate the fact he's doing that very, very much. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Doug Birdsong, you are my hero. I mean, really.
Hey, all I got to say, Steven, I'm not making light of this situation at all, but last night, about 9:05, I was thinking I was having a heart attack. It was quite a game.
Quite a game. There are ingredients that go into something like this. What was it that allowed Colgate to be in front? And then what clicked and changed?
I think Colgate, as really most every team in the Patriot League has done, and you're seeing this with Penn State. First off, I want to say congratulations to Coach Chambers and those young men who represent Pennsylvania State University, because I tell you what, they are playing outstanding basketball, and they deserve all the good things that are coming their way. Now, back to Bucknell. I think that, you know, Bucknell is getting everybody's best shot, and the makeup of this year's team is a lot of the guys, maybe most of the guys, are laid back. They aren't the kind of guys that are going to, you know, just get your face and that kind of stuff. I mean, they're very competitive, but I think they kind of have a little bit of a laissez-faire attitude, you know, not trying to be too up or too down. When the other teams are coming at you and they're pumped up, it tends to, I think, sometimes, and you know, things just go the way of the opponent, it kind of puts you in a bind. And I think Bucknell got in that bind. Fortunately, they played good enough defensively to hang in there. You know, down by double digits, but not by 20 or 25, which could have happened the way Bucknell was unable to get the ball to fall in the rim. And they hung in, and then things changed.
Well, you need to get a break along the way. How important was the break of the flagrant one? I mean, look, it had to be called, but still, a mistake like that on Colgate's part that opened the door for free throws and the ball.
You know, that was a huge play, Steve, but I'll go even further. 86% free throw shooter, one of the few seniors on this year's Colgate team, Sean O'Brien, kid from Pennsylvania, he misses his first free throw. Makes his second. So instead of being up 9, Colgate's up 8 with about a minute and a half left. Then Bucknell puts on full court pressure after scoring and after hitting a 3, cutting it to 5, and Colgate inbounds the ball right in front of me, and one of the kids, Jordan Swapshire, got from my vantage point, which was literally right in front of me, pushed out of bounds. Yeah. But the official was right there, and he didn't call it. He said Bucknell ball. So there's two big breaks. And then, of course, as you said, the intentional foul, and you had to call it. I mean, Raymond just made a mistake, and instead of going for the ball, he just grabbed Nana Fallon on the shoulders and pulled him backwards. And fortunately for Nana, he had enough strength to put the ball over the rim and in. But it was kind of like a few big breaks for the Bison, and they made some breaks for themselves, obviously.
This is one of those times where they actually had a little bit of time off between games. They had played 4 games in 8 days, and the last part of that happened to be at Lehigh. As you mentioned, look, Bucknell's used to getting everybody's shot in the league. I mean, they're used to that. They should be, because they've been the preeminent team in the league now for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Did that rest mean anything? Not in the terms of the result of last night's game, but what did it mean to them to at least get a little time off?
Well, I think it definitely helped their legs, but, you know, there's always that trade-off, too, and I'm not too sure that the team wasn't a little rusty in in-game action. You would think, you know, a week off, it does help your legs, but basketball is with any sport, you know this as well as anybody, Steve. It's a mental thing, and sometimes, you know, if the other team's coming at you, and they're a very good team, I mean, Colgate's in second place in the Patriot League for a reason, they... You know, you kind of get take a step or two back. You get staggered, a couple of blows to you. And it just took, it seemed like this Bucknell team, a little extra time than what the coaches and probably the fans wanted, just to kind of get settled and get back. And it was almost the end of the game before they really kind of got their legs under them.
What does the leadership of a guy like Stephen Brown mean? And what has the experience? Doug, I look at experienced teams right now, and it's the Villanovas, the Purdues, the Virginias. They're all at the top of the rankings right now. And it's no mistake, by the way, that even though Michigan State starts younger players, they have 155 career starts coming off the bench. So that's still an older team, too. What does that mean in terms of defense? What does that mean in terms of communication and transition and so forth, that older teams handle that better than younger teams do?
Well, I think, as you all know, too, experience matters because you don't get phased. You've been in these situations before, maybe not quite to the extent that Bucknell was in last night to Colgate, but you've been in these situations. You've been down. You know what it takes to be able to make the plays. You don't, you don't panic. And I think, you know, once you've been in a situation, it's like driving a car. You know, if you're driving enough on snow and you start to slide and you've slid before, you know how to turn into that slide. So you don't panic and then careen out and run into a guardrail or something. And I don't think that with all the seniors, those three big seniors, Thomas, Fallon, and Brown, I don't think they careened off the road and ran into a guardrail. They just kind of steadied it, turned into the slide, and they were able to pull out the victory.
Tell me about Stephen Brown as a point guard and what kind of extension he's become of Nathan out on the floor.
He has. I mean, you know, Stephen is probably the one individual who doesn't get as much credit as Thomas and Fallon of the three seniors, but he is so solid as a person, first and foremost, and he is an extension of what Coach Davis wants. And, you know, oddly enough, when Stephen struggles, the team struggles. He didn't score until midway through the second half, and then he didn't really get most of his 11 points, or 10 points, I guess it was, until the very last 3 minutes of the game. No surprise, Bucknell comes back in those last 3 minutes, and a lot of that is due to Stephen.
How was the crowd down the stretch when this whole thing was happening?
Well, unfortunately, a bunch of people did go out, and I think they're probably kicking themselves now for doing that.
Yeah, but they got to hear you.
Yeah. They're really kicking themselves for that, Steve. But
I know when people leave the Jordan Center early, I feel like it doubles our ratings. So I mean, right back.
Well, I guess that's one way of looking at it for sure. But those
I'm a positive
who did
guy.
I definitely know that. But I tell you what, you know, those who stayed, they were obviously treated to an incredible finish. One of those Alcoa moments, you remember those? The old Steelers were a lot of them in the 70s. But
yeah.
I tell you what, those folks were really into the game. The ones who were there, and a lot of the students stayed, and those who were there, they really, I thought, helped pump up the Bison.
What do you want to see here down the stretch before they get to the tournament?
I think the coaches want to see, and obviously I'll echo their thoughts, they want to see this team start first halves better. You know, Bucknell now has had to come from behind, and in many of these cases, double digits behind, from the first half to the second half, and now five of Bucknell's 13 Patriot League games. So, yeah, you know, you can't keep living on the edge like that. Now, if Bucknell wins tomorrow night against Loyola, be another tough task, then the Bison are going to wrap up another regular season title, and it's already mathematically in the books. But, right, you know, you just can't keep living again on the edge, and the coaches don't want to see that, and I don't think the players do either. So it'll be interesting to see if Bucknell can start well and play up, as Coach Paul Harrison said to me yesterday, play up to the team's potential. This team has a lot of potential. You know that. Bucknell fans know that. The players know that. And, you know, it's time now we're coming near March. It's time to see it.
Well, yeah, there are usually several stages that I see with programs. One is the ability to start winning at home. That's a big step. The next big step is the ability to then win on the road. And then there's another step along the way that shows that you understand the maturity of it, the ability to knock somebody out. If you're really good teams, we can talk about all the games that are won by 5 points or less. Yeah, you have to have the ability to win close games. But really good teams aren't in close games. They usually blow somebody out. You know, and that's the stage you sense at this point that I'm sure the coaches would like to see with Bucknell, that, hey, look, you got three chances in a game to win. Sometimes it's the first half. Knock them out.
No doubt about it. And to be quite honest, in that 10-game winning streak, the Bison did win by double digits in all
but,
I think, two of those. So, you know, they're very capable. The problem was they were down, you know, in four of those before exploding in the second half.
Yeah, exactly. And again, really good teams. I mean, people don't realize, like, Krzyzewski's record in games decided by 5 points or less is about the same as everybody else. It's just he's not in those games. Okay.
Exactly.
Doug, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. Awesome, awesome call, my friend. I love it.
Hey, Steve, it's always great talking with you. You're the best, buddy, and I appreciate you having me on. And from everybody on the Bison Nation side, go Bison.
Okay, you are my hero, Doug Purcell.
Thank you.
We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Cupid's arrow has hit the bullseye. Cupid has hit the sign in front of Sunbury Motors Kia. Drive by and you'll believe in love at first sight, too. 0% for 75 months. With this deal at Sunbury Motors Kia. 0% financing for up to 75 months on 2018 Kia Fortes, Optimus, Sportages, and Serenos. See for yourself why Kia offers America's best value. An industry-leading 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty on the highest-ranked large car, compact car, small SUV, midsize SUV, and compact multi-purpose vehicle in initial quality according to J.D. Power. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? Sunbury Motors Kia has 25 Kia-certified pre-owned vehicles on the lot. Cupid hit the bullseye of savings at Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com. For JD Power award information, visit JDPower.com. See dealer for details.
I let this one go on a little longer because I liked it. This guy's sitting there like, oh, that's pretty good. I like that. College football attendance down nationally. Lowest point since 1983 on average, but that's not because of the local club. The local club did just fine. Here we are attendance-wise. All right, just so you know. Let me give you the overall numbers here. 3,695 games from FBS to Division III saw a drop of nearly 1.7 million fans from 2016 in data released by the NCAA. That's an average of 380 fans per game, a 2.86% drop from year one. FBS saw the largest over-the-year drop in 35 years. I said 83, so that's right. Losing an average of 1,409 spectators down to an average of 42,203. The Southeastern Conference was down 3%. They had the biggest drop of any conference per game, down 3%. FCS saw a relatively low drop, just 1.6% overall. But the SEC had the biggest drop, down 3%. Of the Power 5 conferences, only the Big Ten increased slightly, but increased in average per game. That's in part due to two schools, Purdue and Penn State. Number one in FBS in average attendance per game, Michigan, 111,589. Ohio State was second in the nation in average attendance, 107,495. Penn State was third in the nation in attendance, 106,707. Remember, that is slightly above capacity. Alabama, because remember, Penn State dropped its capacity down 800 from a couple years ago when they complied with ADA by taking out the first three rows and putting in ADA seating in the bottom of the bowl. Alabama, 101,722, was fourth. Texas A&M, fifth, with an average attendance of 98,802. The biggest gainers in FBS, Purdue, which registered 7 wins this year, big jump for them. Also saw a big jump in attendance. Their average attendance jumped 13,433 per game. Akron went up 9,200 per game. Florida Atlantic went up 8,800 per game. New Mexico State, right? That's Florida Atlantic with Lane Kiffin. New Mexico State made a bowl game first time in, what, 50-something years? Okay, went up 8,694 per game in Las Cruces, and Penn State was fifth, averaging 6,450 more per game this season. Number one in attendance in FCS was Montana at 23,535, followed by James Madison, Florida A&M, Yale, and Montana State. Tuskegee led Division II, followed by Grand Valley State, Morehouse College, Valley State, and Texas A&M Commerce. Division III was led by St. Thomas in Minnesota,
followed by St. John's in Minnesota, Emory and Henry in Virginia, Geneva here in Pennsylvania, and Concordia Moorhead in Minnesota. Now, if you're wondering what the top attendance, average attendance in FCS, Montana was 23,535. Top in Division II was Tuskegee at 14,998. St. Thomas of Minnesota tops in Division III at 74,78. So that is where things stood in attendance this year. It's just good to be reminded of that. And again, how fortunate we are here with what's gone on at Penn State to see the football program be back among the elite, to be in the conversation, which then translates to more people who absolutely ache to be there. And I think one of the great stories ever is the fact that Penn State, when everything happened, right, were there some people that stopped going? Yes, but the vast majority stayed, and because they stayed, they bear credit for not just staying, but they had an influence on games because Penn State never fell below 500. They had an influence on recruiting because recruits came in and they saw all these people and went, wow, this is some place here. People are really into what's going on here. You know, the fan base deserves a big, a lot of credit for that. Now that they're winning, more people have come back. They're involved and it's made a big difference. And there's the Big Ten with those three right there. Michigan 1, Ohio State 2, Penn State 3. And all of them drawing numbers. Now, those numbers include everybody in the building. Includes everybody in the building. So that one, that includes sideline people, media people, you know, you name it. But all three of them are above capacity. At a time where you're seeing people lose attendance, those three all increased ever so slightly.
You know, another fan base I'm thinking of, Steve, here in the conference is Nebraska. I mean, they have high expectations year in and year out, and now you have Scott Frost back in the program. They've already started to sell tickets for their spring game, and looks like the demand is back up. I mean, I don't know the numbers. I don't know how much they suffered attendance-wise when they
were actually. They've actually, in terms of tickets sold, they've sold out every game since 1962. And that includes the season. All the tickets were sold this year. But obviously, you did not have a fan base that was very happy at all. And I think they feared that if it kept going the way it was going, that they were going to start losing part of that base. I mean, they do have a waiting list there. Hey, by the way, you know who's going to be at the game on Thursday night? Here, Stefan Wisniewski of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Love it.
Yeah, he's going to be here. Yep.
How cool would it be, even during a quick timeout, he'd come out to the court and bring in the Lombardi Trophy. All those kids from that live in Philly, they'd see that, they'd go nuts. Me and those that didn't get a chance to road trip down to the parade last week.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he has possession of it or not, but he is going to be here. So. Yeah, so that's all happening here. So, yeah, he's going to be here. They want a white out, and he's going to show up, and a lot of different teams are going to be there. And then after that, you got to go out, you got to play and win. you got to win the darn thing now. But that's what, to me, what is great about a game like this. I could have sat here, and many times, you know, you'll run through, all right, let's, you know, you'll be asked, what are the keys to a particular game? Well, there's been so many games where you sit there and say, well, you're going to need a little bit of help here, and you're going to need a little bit of help there. In other words, they can't shoot threes well. Penn State can't turn it over. You need to turn them over, have them make a few more mistakes than they usually make. I'm not when you're playing a top 10 team. That's not the case with this game. What's really great about this game on Thursday night is that Ohio State could play really well and Penn State could play really well, both at the same time. Ohio State might win five, Penn State might win five. It's not in this, gee, I hope the other guy fails to give this team a chance. Penn State's good enough to win it on their own, just like Ohio State's good enough to win it on its own. Now, that's the really cool part about it.